ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
G'day, welcome to The World Today. It's Tuesday, the 16th of December. I'm Nick Grimm, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, Australia's gun laws to be tightened, but will it be enough to prevent another Bondi mass shooting? And defiance in the face of tragedy, Jews across the world come together to display their faith.
We decided to come back tonight just like we always going to. And ultimately, this Hanukkah event is to share that light, share that hope with other multicultural communities that have been experiencing discrimination, racism and intolerance, just like the Jewish community has experienced anti-Semitism over the past 2 years.
A second day of mourning is well underway for the victims of the Bondi shooting, with crowds continuing to gather and pay their respects at the scene of Sunday's terror attack. Amid the shock, disbelief and anger, there is hope among those who want to see the wider community come together to overcome hatred. As the nation grapples with how to respond to the mass shooting, with tougher gun laws now on the agenda, there's concern too about a rise in anti-Semitism. There's also more detail on the shooters, with the ABC confirming father and son gunmen Sajid and Naveed Akram travelled to the Philippines to receive military-style training in the month leading up to the attack. Investigators are now examining the Akram's ties to an international jihadist network. We begin our coverage today with the latest from our reporter Tanya Dendrinos, who's joined us from Bondi Beach. Tanya, can you describe the scene down there today?
The stream of people here outside the Bondi Pavilion has been continuous, Nick. The grief is certainly palpable, but the overwhelming message from community leaders gathered today is one of unity and resilience. They've said all Australians, no matter their background or religious belief, should be able to live safely and not in fear. And as you walk down the ramp towards what is a growing sea of floral tributes, there is a message that really stands out. And I'll read it to you in part. It says, "Choosing to hate in any way never made us safer. Choosing to love in every way makes us unstoppable." Now, even still, there is a strong sense of anger and frustration among many members of the Jewish community who've told me today that Sunday's terror attack was sadly not a surprise to them, that their fears had long been ignored, that something like this would take place. And so they're here, gathered together today, trying to make sense of their grief and to come to terms with it collectively.
There's a saying in the Jewish community, and it's ancient, that we're not Jews with trembling knees. And for us to return to the scene of heartbreak and where our community was threatened, it's a Jewish principle to rise and to be present and to come together as a community.
Just one of those gathering at that memorial that's formed at Bondi. And Tanya, the Israeli ambassador has spoken there as well this morning. What's he had to say?
That's right. Israel's ambassador to Australia, Amir Maimon, visited the vigil site, paying his respects to those who died in Sunday night's attack and also expressing his support for their loved ones and for the broader Jewish community. He said that his heart is torn apart. Interestingly, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, levelled very strong criticism at the Australian government for failing to stop the spread of anti-Semitism here in Australia. But Ambassador Maimon wouldn't be drawn on those comments today, instead saying he's not here to comment on the Prime Minister or on the government, but to support the community.
I would like to convey our heartfelt condolences to the community, to all Australians, and to join the community in their call to the government to take all necessary measures to make sure that the life of every Australian, whether a Jew, a Muslim, or a Christian, will be safe.
That's the Israeli ambassador to Australia, Amir Maimon, and before him, our reporter Tanya Dendrinos there at Bondi Beach. Well, National Cabinet has unanimously agreed to strengthen gun laws in the wake of the Bondi Beach attack. The federal government is also under pressure to address rising anti-Semitism. It comes as investigations continue into the two gunmen, with Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke forced to defend the work of Australia's security agencies. Bridget Fitzgerald reports.
As Australians search for answers as to how such an horrific and violent terrorist attack could be carried out, attention is turning to security agencies. One of the Bondi gunmen was known to Australia's domestic intelligence agency, ASIO, while the other, his father, held licences for six guns. Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke has conceded agencies must improve how information is shared.
Linking our intelligence capacity to gun licensing is a very big step which we haven't taken before. This is where different layers of information, if we've got it and it can be used potentially to protect people, then let's find a way to use it.
But he defended the work of ASIO and other agencies.
Our intelligence agencies can only work with what they have and work with what they know. They will never be all-seeing and all-knowing. And I see examples from information that's given to me every day. Every single day of how they keep Australians safe. In hindsight, people look back, and obviously ASIO always reviews its processes and always looks back to make sure that things are getting stronger and stronger. But some of the criticism of our security, intelligence and law enforcement agencies that I've seen isn't right.
On Monday, state, territory and Commonwealth leaders agreed to strengthen Australia's gun laws. The proposed changes include plans to limit the number of firearms held by individuals, limits to open-ended licensing, re-examining the types of guns that are legal in Australia, and ensuring only Australian citizens can hold a firearms license. These changes would require the National Firearms Agreement, which was established after the Port Arthur massacre, to be renegotiated. Shadow Home Affairs Minister John O'Dunham says people who perpetrate terrorist acts should absolutely not have access to guns, but he says the coalition will need to see the detail on any proposed gun reform before it offers its support.
Clearly, there are issues with one of the alleged perpetrators who had access to weapons in the number of six. So, sure, changes need to be made, but we need to make sure they're the right ones, and we would like to see the detail before we put any yes or no behind what's being put forward.
The coalition says it wants the government to change its approach to anti-Semitism as a priority. Anti-Semitism envoy Gillian Siegel provided a series of recommendations to the Prime Minister and Minister Burke in July, which the government hasn't formally responded to. John O'Dunham says that's not good enough.
We will welcome any action that's taken, but not enough has been, and what has been taken clearly is not enough because of what we saw earlier this week.
Dr. Anne Ali is the Federal Minister for Multicultural Affairs and was a counter-terrorism expert before she was elected to Parliament. She says the federal government has been working to address anti-Semitism.
Among them, the strengthening of legislation. Among them, the strengthening of institutional accountability and reform. Education awareness and public discourse. We've expanded the work of Together for Humanity that works within schools.
Former Attorney General Mark Dreyfus is a Jewish member of federal parliament. He says while the government has made changes, including to hate speech laws that he tabled in parliament in 2024, more needs to be done.
We've got to resolutely, as an entire community, turn our face against Jew hatred and anti-Semitism.
Labor MP Mark Dreyfus, Bridget Fitzgerald with that report. Well, Australia appears set to see changes to gun laws, with federal, state and territory leaders agreeing to strengthen controls in the wake of the attack. Let's get some reaction to the ideas being floated. First, let's go to Tim Quinn. He's the president of Gun Control Australia. Tim Quinn, what does Gun Control Australia want to see happen in response to the nation's latest mass shooting?
Limiting the number of guns is a good idea in some people's minds, but limiting that to 10 or 5 is not doing a massive piece for the community. I would like to see that go further to limit the amount of guns you can have to the type of work you do with a gun. If you are a primary producer or you are eradicating feral animals, for example, you may need something that's a little bit more high-powered and you might need a variety of guns. If you're somebody in suburban Sydney who occasionally goes hunting, you should be limited a lot more. And we don't want to see more than one gun there, really. So it should be based on the license type that you've got. There's also aspects around recreational hunting. If you're a hunter, you are directly part of the proliferation of guns in Australia. We now have well over 4 million guns in Australia. That's well more than 1996 when the National Firearms Agreement came through and destroyed a lot of those. And in New South Wales, we're currently sitting with more than one gun per person, even though the vast majority of Australians and New South Welshmen do not need a gun, do not shoot, and agree that there's more to be done on gun laws.
So to be clear, you're saying the effectiveness of our gun laws has been watered down since they were introduced in the wake of Port Arthur?
Absolutely, absolutely. We introduced things in the NFA, in the National Firearms Agreement, that effectively made it easier to get a gun. We basically made it that you have to have a genuine reason to own a gun, which is a great idea, except it became an industry where gun clubs popped up all over the place, making money, charging membership fees, and that became a lobbying group. And now we have lobbyists in Parliament speaking in back rooms and selling guns and becoming an actual industry, something that Australians just cannot believe would possibly be an American style of operation in Australia, and it's happening.
And that's Tim Quinn from Gun Control Australia with that perspective. Let's get another view now. Dr. Samara McFedrin studies firearm violence and gun policy at Griffith University. Samara McFedrin, Australia seems destined to see its gun laws tightened in the wake of Bondi. What's your take on how well we've been served by our existing gun control regime?
For many, many years, we've prided ourselves on having extremely strict gun laws. Of course, in 1996, we saw the introduction of sweeping changes, bans, buybacks, very tight restrictions. The difficulty is this. Over and over again, we've taken exactly the same approach. We've reacted very quickly to incidents. Politicians have made very rapid decisions, and then we wonder why we don't get a different result. So really, we have an opportunity to do things differently and better, but unfortunately, it seems as if our political leaders are just going down the same path that they've trodden on many past occasions.
Okay, so what do you believe would be different and better?
Well, the first thing is to just pause, let the police do their investigation and get all of the facts. Now, we don't even know at this stage what may have gone wrong with the firearms licensing process. And without that knowledge, we can't pinpoint where we should intervene and change things to do better. So making decisions in the absence of clear facts and information is never going to deliver the best results.
Well, one fact that we do possess is that Sajid Akram, the Bondi shooter who was gunned down by police, he legally owned 6 firearms. Why would somebody from a suburb in the Sydney metropolitan area need multiple firearms in the first place?
Oh, lots of different reasons. Hunters, they typically have multiple firearms for different types of animals they hunt and different types of terrain they hunt in. Target shooters typically have multiple firearms for different matches they participate in, different competitions they take part in. It may sound like a lot, but 6 is actually not an unusual number. There's nothing terribly striking about it.
Griffith University firearms researcher Dr. Samara McFedrin there. Across the world, Hanukkah celebrations have become vigils for the victims of the Bondi attack. In Melbourne last night, Jewish Australians marking the second day of Hanukkah have vowed their faith won't be shaken by an act of cowardice. Alison Shaw reports.
On a sombre night in Sydney, after one of Australia's darkest days, a symbol of light and resilience, a single sail of the Opera House lit up with the image of a 9-candle Hanukkah menorah. Despite the sadness, people raised their voices in song at the site of Sunday's attack. In Melbourne, hundreds gathered at Federation Square to mark the second day of Hanukkah, with live music and traditional foods like donuts and potato pancakes. Rabbi Gabby Koltman is from the ARK Centre in Hawthorne East and is the event's organiser.
People are grieving. People are heartbroken. They're horrified. Who in their right mind could ever imagine the scenes that we witnessed? It's just unfathomable as Australians. So many of us are descendants of people that came to these shores in search of a better life, away from all this horror and terror and war.
Melbourne's event almost didn't happen because of safety concerns for the community, but Victoria Police and Security were on standby to reassure attendees.
This Hanukkah event is to share that light, share that hope with other multicultural communities that have been experiencing discrimination, racism and intolerance, just like the Jewish community has experienced anti-Semitism over the past 2 years. And we stand together in solidarity.
Tarang Chawla is a former Victorian Multicultural Commissioner and was emceeing the Hanukkah event.
It's easy to feel powerless. But today is a reminder that we have a choice about what we amplify. We decide whether fear shrinks our world, whether care and compassion expands it with love.
In London, crowds gathered outside Parliament, a man waving a flag reading Jewish and Proud, the Hanukkah celebration there turning into a vigil for the Bondi victims.
We're just sick of all these terror attacks because we just come to all these vigils all the time to show solidarity with other Jews around the world, and we're just getting really tired of this situation.
In a dark room in Jerusalem, men and women raised their phone lights. Yehuda Seton is the CEO of the Jewish Agency.
We are here to spread light, even in the face of darkness. Especially in times as difficult as this, it is our responsibility to continue to generate hope.
In Sydney's Hyde Park last night, leaders of the Jewish, Muslim and Indigenous communities gathered to remember Sunday's victims. Bilal Rayl from the Australian National Imams Council was one of the speakers.
It was, a multicultural, multi-faith gathering to really honour those who had passed away, but also to express support and put our arms around our Jewish brothers and sisters, people behind the horrific events that we saw. They have one objective, to tear us apart and divide us. And the best way to respond to that is to reach out to the grieving community, but then also project strength and unity.
Bilal Rauf from the Australian National Imams Council, ending that report by Alison Shaw and Kimberly Price. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. You can subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search on The World Today. To other news now, the son of Hollywood director Rob Reiner has been arrested on suspicion of murder after his parents were found dead in their Los Angeles home. The LA Sheriff's Department has confirmed 32-year-old Nick Reiner is being held in custody without bail. Today, Rob Reiner, sometime actor and a celebrated director, is being remembered for producing some of cinema's most memorable moments. But the tragic circumstances of his and wife Michelle Reiner's deaths hasn't prevented the US President Donald Trump doubling down on his past criticism of the famous director, describing him as deranged. Stephanie Smale reports.
Rob Reiner was a celebrated film director and father of four, his youngest son Nick Reiner now in police custody on suspicion of killing his father and mother Michelle Reiner. Jim McDonnell is the chief of the Los Angeles Police Department.
We have our robbery homicide division handling the investigation. They worked throughout the night on this case, and were able to take into custody Nick Reiner, a suspect in this case.
Police say Rob and Michelle Reiner were found dead in their LA home on Sunday afternoon, local time. But Chief Jim McDonnell says he's limited in what else he can share publicly about the investigation.
Pretty much that's what I can share at this point. But again, a very, very tragic incident.
Rob Reiner's assistant has asked the media to give the family privacy as the investigation unfolds.
Thank you so much.
Rob Reiner directed some of the most memorable scenes in Hollywood history, including Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan's romantic confrontation at the end of When Harry Met Sally.
I came here tonight because when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible.
That is just like you, Harry. You say things like that and you make it impossible for me to hate you. And I hate you, Harry.
The 1980s music mockumentary This Is Spinal Tap and fantasy film The Princess Bride are favourites too.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
This searing courtroom exchange between Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men led to an Academy Award nomination for Best Picture.
You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
Who's a genius and just shocked.
Fans say they're devastated by the loss of Rob and Michelle Reiner.
Yeah, it's a sad day for everybody who appreciates great films.
We lose people like that, I think, and we're not getting them back in the same way, which I think is a massive shame, that people who are balancing their work with their social justice matters.
Rob Reiner was just as prominent in politics as he was in film. He was vocal in his opposition to Donald Trump, making these comments during President Trump's first term.
Donald Trump is the single most unqualified human being to ever assume the presidency of the United States. He's mentally unfit.
His death didn't elicit any sympathy from the president.
Well, I wasn't a fan of his at all. He was a deranged person as far as Trump is concerned.
Rob Reiner was 78 and his wife was 68. Despite his age, Scott Roxburgh from The Hollywood Reporter says the director wasn't slowing down.
He definitely was not planning to retire. He was definitely had a lot planned going forward. Unfortunately, of course, none of that will now come to fruition.
Scott Roxburgh from The Hollywood Reporter, ending that story by Stephanie Smale. Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been found guilty of national security offences in a case described by human rights groups as a farce and politically motivated. The landmark case has drawn international scrutiny of Hong Kong's judicial independence. China correspondent Alison Horn reports from Beijing.
Outside the High Court in Hong Kong, Jimmy Lai supporters queued for hours alongside a heavy police presence. This man nervous for the outcome.
Honestly, the hope of being found not guilty is just a sincere wish. If he is convicted, I hope the country understands that there will not be another Jimmy Lai in this world.
Jimmy Lai is well known as one of Hong Kong's most outspoken critics of China and the tightening controls enforced under its leader Xi Jinping. Lai was arrested in 2020 and charged with sedition and colluding with foreign forces to endanger the national security of Hong Kong and China. At the time, his media outlet, The Apple Daily, regularly published pro-democracy and dissident content. His son, Sebastian Lai, says his father is innocent.
In the 800-page verdict that they have, there's essentially nothing. There's nothing that incriminates him. There's nothing that, even under their own legal system, would make him guilty.
In revealing the verdict, the court described Lai as harbouring a hatred and resentment of China for many years and said Lai had conspired with others like the United States to endanger China's national security. But advocacy groups claim the verdict sends a chilling warning that dissent against the Chinese government will be silenced. Human Rights Watch calling it a travesty of justice, Amnesty International saying it's a death for press freedom in Hong Kong. This case could also test diplomatic relations. The United Kingdom, where Lai is a British citizen, has condemned the prosecution and called for his release. China's foreign affairs spokesman Guo Jiakun says other countries need to respect China's sovereignty.
China expresses its strong dissatisfaction and firm opposition to the blatant slander and defamation of Hong Kong's judicial system by certain countries.
Jimmy Lai's lawyers have a month to decide if they'll try to appeal against the verdict. He's now facing a potential sentence of life in prison. This is Alison Horn in Beijing, reporting for The World Today.
And that's all from The World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Nick Grimm.
Hi, I'm Andy Park, filling in for Sam Hawley on ABC News Daily. It was an act of terrorism that Jewish leaders long feared. So, in the depths of their sorrow, how are they coping? And what are they asking for? Today, Rabbi Mendel Castell from support group Jewish House, whose own brother-in-law, Rabbi Eli Schlanger, was killed in the attack. And I ask Federal Sydney Liberal Member of Parliament, Julian Lisa, where Australians, outraged at this attack, should direct their anger. Look for ABC News Daily on the ABC Listen app.